Streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Linda Kenyon. It's Super Bowl Sunday and security is tighter than ever. Reporter Ian Ozan is in New Orleans.
President Trump is expected to arrive at the Superdome just before kickoff late this afternoon. When he gets there, he'll see local, state, and military police guarding the area around the venue. The Department of Homeland Security labeled the Super Bowl as a SEER Level 1 event following the New Year's Day terror attack on Bourbon Street, putting security in downtown New Orleans at an all-time high. Those security efforts appear to be working, as no violent crimes were reported in the downtown area during Super Bowl week. That's good news for thousands of football fans who flock to the city, all of them with differing opinions on who will win the championship.
Eagles by 2.
KC by 3.
Eagles by 3.
Philly by 6.
Ian Ozan for CBS News, New Orleans.
In a pre-Super Bowl interview with Fox News, President Trump expressed confidence in Elon Musk and the unofficial Department of Government Efficiency. The courts have halted some of the Doge's moves. The president wants Elon Musk to continue to look for ways to cut spending.
Trust Elon? Oh, he's not gaining anything. In fact, I wonder how he can devote the time to it. He's so into it. But I told him do that. Then I'm going to tell him very soon, like maybe in 24 hours, to go check the Department of Education.
The president has expressed a desire to shutter that agency. Some 65,000 federal workers have accepted buyout offers from the Doge. A federal judge in Massachusetts holds a hearing on that tomorrow. CBS News chief legal correspondent Jan Crawford spoke about it on Face the Nation.
What about those 65,000 people who say they want those? They right. want to do this. They may have a claim now. They're relying on this. So that raises a whole nother legal issue if these buyouts cannot proceed.
Several unions have challenged the buyout, saying that many jobs cannot be cut without congressional approval. Democrats are toughening their language as they fight the president's efforts to slash the federal workforce and the agencies they work for.
Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy was blunt.
This is the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate. The president is attempting to seize control of power and for corrupt purposes.
Ohio Republican Congressman Mike Turner disagreed.
We do not have a constitutional crisis. The executive branch is trying to get control over the executive branch. Unfortunately, sometimes on the left, they view the bureaucracy as a fourth branch of government and that it's not to be touched.
The two spoke on ABC. A series of federal judges have blocked Trump's attempts to close some government agencies. Christopher Cruz, CBS News, Washington.
The Northeast has been shoveling out today. 4 to 5 inches of snow fell last night. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around zero. Mostly sunny with a high near 16 for Monday. Monday night, clearing out and cold with a low of 7 below and wind chills of 15 below. For Tuesday, sunshine and cold, a high near 8, wind chills 10 to 20 below.
Currently, 17 degrees.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Playhouse for this February 6, 2025, Session 58. Your host, Program Director here, James J. Mailoff. I'm here with my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habhager.
You got the name right. I was hoping, you know, that's what I keep telling myself. Yeah, Director's Playhouse, Yeah, we'll make sure we get it for this one.
Only our second show with this new name, the new branding, and great to have you back, brother. Great to have you on the show.
Nice to be here.
We appreciate you, and we appreciate appreciate you out there listening and promoting this show. Thank you so much to everybody out there. With this show, we continue the civic series and idea of ours that we had where we give a chance to get to know our civic media family a little bit better. And today, we are going to center in and focus on WFHR here. And our listeners, we ask the best listeners in radio to come. Welcome to the WFHR stage. We have our head scheduler, our the head of the office, the decorator, the world's best card giver, the heart of WFHR, Pam Hilke, with us today. Pam, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Appreciate you being here. Nobody that in the last, I would say, 40, 50 years, let alone longer than that, can talk about WFHR and not mention Pam Hilke. Mm-hmm. Like, your impact on this station, this community, is felt and reverberated all over the place in so many different ways. In the job that you're in, you've had a chance to meet just about every local person we've had in this area, let alone local leaders and some of that. So I can't thank you enough for the time to just be able to hang out, talk with you a little bit, and for our audience to get to know you like Seth and I and so many of us have gotten to know you over the years. If you don't mind, I always like to start with people's origin stories. Where are you from, Pam?
I am from Wisconsin Rapids.
Right on.
Lived here all my life.
Growing up, did you have your family, did you guys have a love for radio?
Well, WFHR was often on the radio at home, at my parents' home. I grew up on the west side, and I just remember WFHR being on the radio. I remember listening to the polka show when I was a youngster. My mom would have the polka show on like 11 o'clock on weekday mornings and hearing the polka show. I remember in the mornings getting ready for school, WFHR would be on. Of course, back then, that was the total information that we had to listen to find out on a blizzard day, is school canceled? You know, is this a no school day or not? That was where we got the information. There was, of course, no internet, no computers, nothing, no texting that came around, of course. My parents had WFHR on. I remember hearing a lot of the songs, you know, growing up in the 60s, some of those classic songs that you would hear on radio stations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every once in a while, I'll hear it now, and I'll say, I remember that when I was a kid.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. It's interesting how I think radio still has just as many responsibilities. They're just different now. But to think of the responsibilities on radio back in the day and how important and vital it was.
Boy, even when we were kids, James, it was the same thing. It was either TV or radio. Mm-hmm. We always did radio because we didn't turn the TV on in the morning. We always had the radio on, yeah. Right.
My mom and dad, when it came to school closings or anything, WFHR as soon as we moved here, because they felt like the radio stations got the information sooner than, you know, TV stations, and they just trusted that more, which was great, because we got an impact, like you and your family, impact of WFHR right away. It also was tough because they knew, and we were always hopeful, so if WFHR said that Lincoln was open or Washington was open or something, we knew we were going to school that day.
There was a time when the local teachers union for the public schools was on strike, and the strike started like January 1st after their contract had ended. And you know, every day we'd have to listen to find out, is there school today? No school today. It's another day off.
Yeah, there you go.
And sports, listening to sports. I remember listening to, you know, Lincoln High School. I graduated from LHS. And, you know, following those teams on air, you know, the basketball or maybe football. And I do remember listening to wrestling during, you know, high school, because that was the years when our teams were so good in that sport. And, you know, listening to Terry Steak. And I remember him saying, you know, he'd be on at 10:30 in the morning. Well, I'll be back at 11:30. And, you know, you make sure you tune in to hear, okay, how did our people do, you know, at the tournament? And it was that outlet there that, you know, that for so much information.
I have a question I want to ask, but I want to set it up first, Pam. Okay. For those that don't know out there, how long have you been in radio?
Well, I started here in June 1977.
Okay, yeah. So a good 40-some years.
That's a lot of years. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I never had any idea that I would be still working at my job here.
Well, so. that's where I wanted to go with it was you started in this. This has been your career pretty much
right,
your whole life.
It turned out to be.
So when you first got when you first went to school, what were you going to school for? Was it for radio? Was it for something?
No, I went to Mid-State and I had a 2-year degree in accounting. And about a month after I graduated, it was June of 1977. This is it. I graduated. I got to find a job, you know, go forward with life. Mm-hmm. And there was a little ad in the local Daily Tribune newspaper for immediate opening for a traffic coordinator at the local radio stations, WFHR and WWRW. And it's a detail, need attention to detail and accuracy and a little bit of data processing. And well, I didn't know anything about a job in a radio station. I didn't know anything about a traffic coordinator, but I, got a time to come in for an interview. And I remember I had an interview with Jack Gennaro, the general manager at the time. And it was a Friday afternoon. And I remember, I talked with the program directors at the time, and it was Arnie Strope and Scott Chapin. He was the program director for our FM station, and they offered me the job, and I started right up the next Monday right away.
Wow.
So,
did you, when you were applying for the job, did you think you had a good shot at it?
Not well, you know what? After a couple hours of an interview, and they offered me the job right away, I thought, well, that sounds like,
hey,
I better take this job.
You better go for it.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
Right. And little did I know.
So. Little did you know.
I'm curious because I forget this. As long as we've known each other, that you and I both pretty much started in radio the same way. My mother found an article in the Daily Tribune and told me about it. And when I applied for the job, I just thought it'd be cool to apply for the job. I didn't think I'd ever get hired. I didn't think I had a resume built for it or anything like that. And, you know, here we are. I find it interesting that you went to school for one thing and found a way to adapt to radio with that career, with that education. It speaks to a lot of us here. There's very few people in the building and really even in the last 10, 20 years who have gotten into radio and found a career and a passion for it,
right,
but didn't necessarily go to school for it right away. It speaks to, I think, to also the one of my favorite things about radio and how so many different walks of life can come into this and find a career and a real future to them. And so many people looking for careers instead of jobs, you find that in radio oftentimes. When you first started here, I imagine you're not thinking, well, here I am the next 40 years, you know.
Right. No.
Those early days, did you enjoy kind of being behind the scenes? You mentioned you listened to WFHR from a young age.
I did, right, because then I got a chance to see a little bit of what was happening and, meet some of the people that I'd heard on air. And I remember I didn't know that sometimes people wouldn't use their real names on air.
And,
I remember growing up in here in Arnie Strope. Well, that was his real name. And then there was another person. His name was Jack Edwards. And then I heard him called by another name. And it's like, well, isn't this the same person?
Yeah.
Okay, then that's it. Sometimes people don't use their real names on air.
Right.
So maybe that was more common back then. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. That's one of those big shifts that I think happened in radio. And I don't know if there's necessarily like pinpoint you could say this is when it happened.
No.
But I would say a lot of the rise of the shock jock and some of that stuff where a lot of those guys were using their real given names.
Yep.
And you just saw it kind of go from there almost. And where audiences wanted things to go.
Right. Of course, some of us probably should be using different names instead of our hard to pronounce names. But
Pam will remember, and longtime listeners of the area will remember, but we for a long time on WGLX had a great personality in Ace. Ace's real name is Paul, but forever I would call him like Gene or something like that, or one of the other names in the band of Kiss or something
right,
like that.
It
took forever for me to just call him Paul. Like it was the weirdest thing.
Who's Paul?
I would know it when I was saying it. He Paul. Paul was just great about it. Everything never gave me a hard time, but it was something that would come up from time to time. Pam, we share a lot of what we do behind the scenes with the audience. We let them know a lot of how the sausage is made. I don't think we get a chance to really do this with you and your job. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, could you take us through kind of a day in the life of the work that you do?
Sure, sure. Well, one of my main jobs is to make sure that the commercials that are ordered and scheduled for tomorrow get scheduled on the proper logs. Now, the log is... Every radio station has a log of some kind. Here we've got a WFHR and we've got a WIRI log. And it's just a basic, for me, what I'm working in my software system in my computer is making sure that the commercials get placed into the areas in the log where we are allowed to run commercial advertising. And I work on traffic systems that are built up to accommodate the commercial breaks that fall into all the programming that's already set up. And that's part of another, you know, computer system. So we're talking about a lot of computer systems merging together and working right and all that. So, but predominantly I make sure the logs get properly worked up. All the commercials are inserted where they need to be. And, look, you know, the computers do a lot of the work, but, you know, there's other things that, you know, you have to tackle. If there's, say, a game tomorrow night, I have to make sure I insert a little, a game log. It's a separate little log that goes inside the big log. So it's kind of blocks out all the regular commercials, but it puts in the game and it sets it up so that it's got the format that works with the Learfield where we might get, say, the men's hockey game and all the sponsors and commercials go right in. And I number all of our audio commercials, a lot of our PSAs, promo announcements, they all have a personal identification, and that's called a copy number. And I number those. Every piece of audio that's coming on new gets copy number, and make sure that there's an identifier with it. I need to put that into the computer system so that when it goes on the log, it's got its little ID number. And then whoever is in, going to be recording that piece of audio, they use that number and attach the audio to that in the system that holds all the audio so that when it's called for on the log, it plays the right commercial. So... Now, that's just logs.
That's just the log part of it.
Real quick, I want to say how important that is because, of course, the commercials are the lifeblood of radio. That's how we get our revenue, right? That's how we get. So, because we have a contract with whoever we're doing that commercial for, we have to make very careful that we play the right number of ads at the right time, that sort of thing. Right. That's why the logs and what Pam does is so important, is because that's, you know, that's the stuff. That's what we need.
And radio can be difficult. It is a it is literally putting the boat together on the water while you're paddling. Live radio is just that way, and we kind of understand and work around that, and we've shared a lot of that with the audience. There is that, and then you're trying to do that in the future. You're trying to do that for tomorrow and next week and everything in an industry that, again, is on the water and constantly changing. Just the adapting and the shifting you have to do on an hourly, let alone daily basis. I want the audience to understand a little bit more. And honestly, it's part of the interview here is for people to understand so much of the work that goes on behind the scenes to make these things happen. We're not here without our advertisers. We're just not, there's nobody doing this job. And people don't get into radio for money anyway, let alone if we're not getting paid. And how much it means to them that not only have these things played, but played when, hey, our sales team tells them it's going to play at this time, and it does because of the work Pam does. It's so vital to this. And again, we are merely touching on one of her main jobs, not even 100% the amount of things that she does around here. Because you're also the main scheduler for our Midday magazine.
Help schedule the guests for magazine.
You're our go-to when it comes to literally anything going on. And you're such the bellwether of this station and such of the and something else that I don't think think gets talked about nearly enough. And I touched on this early in the day when I started doing Midday Magazine, but this amazing connection that you and Carl had and ability that you guys had when you were doing Midday. And it's something you did with all you do with all of our guests. People come in here and they have their lives going on and craziness and whatever might be happening. They come in and they settle down and you have a calm and a presence to you that sets the tone. So when they join us on the airwaves on the morning show with Seth or I or on Midday Magazine or any of our shows, by the time they get in the studio, they are calm and collected. And that is better for our audience. That is what works here. This is a system that I don't think you could put it right down, hey, we're going to do this, this, and this. It's just something that you guys created organically. And it's something not only we appreciate and our guests appreciate, but I know our listeners do, whether they realize it or not. Because you'd have very different guests coming in and a very different atmosphere.
Yeah, it would be different.
With that.
Yes, it's so nice to meet all these different people that are coming into our studio. And we have a number of people that come quite frequently, and then some people that are maybe once or twice a year, or or we find out that there's an event going on or a benefit or whatever. We somehow get contacted, or, you know, we find out about it and we reach out and say, hey, would you be interested in coming on, you know, on air for a short while and be part of our Midday Magazine? And I get things lined up, you know, and they're here.
Yeah, in many ways, Pam is the face of these stations because they're the first. She's the first person that people see when they come in the door, right? And she greets them and, you know, finds out what they need, along with the guests, of course. Any guests that we have that are going to be on whatever show we're doing, right? So that's part of it too. Is that, and I don't know if you signed up for that,
but it's kind of evolved,
right? It kind of evolved into that throughout the many years you've been here.
When it comes to programming, I can't imagine how long the interview would be if we asked you about all the different changes from when you first started to now.
That would be a book. Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's writing that book? Yeah.
And honestly, I personally would love to do that. But for time sensitiveness and how we know we all got to get back to things, I'm curious of how what are the biggest changes to you that are from when you started to now, in as far as the programming goes and the scheduling?
I think as far as the programming, it's just been just the way our stations have evolved over the years. Mm-hmm. Everything isn't always the same. WFHR has certainly changed. Mm. It's back when I first started, there was a whole lot of, well, nearly every hour that we were on air, there was a show host, right, announcer. And I do believe when I first started that we like went off air at 2 a.m. and came back on air at 5 a.m. So, you know, there was a time when we weren't on air. But every hour was hosted by a show, and you had to have somebody in here running the board. There was no totally automated part of that. The FM side that we had was WWRW, and it was called W103. It was a little bit easier to pronounce.
Yeah, that's not easy to do, right?
Right, and that was just music. I forget which exact format it was, adult contemporary, I believe. And at that time, the music was on reels. And there was at least like four reels of different songs and everything on there. And the announcers had to make sure that they kept changing those reels. They'd run out after a while. These reels would run out and they'd race back to the system that was playing that, and the music loaded up. And we had different systems that would play the commercials. It was somewhat automated, but there was different systems that you had to load all the commercials in these carts, and they got played. And in the WFHR side, they had the carts in the studio, and you just had a whole stack of carts. And as you went down the paper log, you had to pull all your carts out by number and get them all ready. And when you're running the board and on air, then take a break, and you'd be pulling all these carts and putting them into the cart machine and playing. So
yes.
That's a whole lot different than it is now.
We still call them cart numbers, actually.
Right, that's still
from that day when they were actual cartridges, right?
Right.
Pam, so. I have to ask a couple of tough questions here and there. So I got to ask you a tough one.
Get it over with here.
Yeah, just pull it up. Do you have some favorite moments? Do you have some moments that really stand out to you in your time here at WFHR?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know.
There's a lot.
I don't know if I would say moments, but I think it's just thinking of all the people that I've met, all the people that I've worked with, and all the people that have come through as guests and been on the station, you know, as our on-air guest, or they were a guest of somebody else that was working here, you know, getting a tour of the place or meeting. But I think just all the wonderful people that, you know, like I said, that I've met along the way and, you know, got a chance to know or just... just famous people, maybe that, you know, somebody, maybe I believe Mr. Cole was here one time, Herb Cole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
You've people, told me about like baseball players when, you know, the Brewers players that you met over the years.
Yes, the Brewers, they used to be on their winter tour and they would stop into the, it was prearranged, they'd be into the office here. Mm-hmm. We've got a photo with Carl and I and Jim Gantner.
Yeah. So many moments over the years, I can only imagine. And like any of us that answered this question, it always comes down to the people. It's always about
it really does. Yeah.
Pam, just a couple of more quick questions. We'll let you get going. It's outside of radio. Do you have other hobbies, other things that you like to do?
You know what? I sometimes think that my life is so busy. I don't have a whole lot of time for different hobbies, but I like to follow the Wisconsin teams and the sports. I was forever having the Brewers on radio all the time, listening to that. I like to listen to the Packers, the Badgers games. I'll have the games on in the evenings and listening to the games or on the weekend. I like to, I guess, fiber arts. I enjoy sewing or crocheting, knitting, those kind of little...
Absolutely.
Arts and crafts. I'm involved with some organizations in my local church at St. Luke's Lutheran in Wisconsin Rapids.
So very cool.
Like to get out, enjoy the countryside on Sundays, go for a ride out in the country.
Drive in the country on Sundays. Right. Nothing better than that, especially in the summertime. Yes. Yeah.
A few things better than cruising on a Sunday.
Yeah, that's right.
Pam, you made it to the last question. Here it is, but it is probably the toughest one.
It usually is.
If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
You know, I've heard you ask that other people, so I thought, I better think about this.
You should. You should have thought about
it. You know what? I think Princess Diana.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, I remember. Wonderful you answer. Know, I remember her when she was getting married, and she was so young and marrying into that. The you know the
craziness,
the
royal
majesty, the royal family, and you know, she was just somebody that. At my age that, you know, we were looking up to her, you know? Yeah. She was going to be the queen, or so we thought. But, yeah, I think just she was just such a neat,
there was something,
neat
she
person.
Was, yeah, there was something about her that was electric even if you never met her. There was something about her that pulled you in. And I think something comforting about her in many ways. And I've gone back and watched some interviews and some things with her, pieces on her and everything. And I tried to think of what it is. Is it, you know, her dying young and some of these things? And no, it's that kind of adds to the, or is a part of her, you know, story.
Yeah, the mystique and
but like so many people we lose at a young age, I think that wouldn't have mattered. Her legacy would still just be strong. Longer, if anything, she had been around. The kind of impact she had at the time that she did, too, was so key to so many.
Yes.
And it just seemed like an amazing person. I remember seeing her early on in her career, and she's, you know, being introduced to some formal meeting or something like that, and all these heads, these big names in England are there. And she sees Rowan Atkins, Mr. Bean.
Yeah, the actor, right?
And at the time, he was more famous for Blackadder.
Right.
And she's doing her job. job. She's being very professional, all this. Mm-hmm. She sees him and becomes a fan. Instantly, it just breaks down like, oh, my God, it's Roman. And she was so excited to meet him and everything. And I think that story speaks so much to what we liked about her.
Her humanity.
Yeah.
It was really, it really came through. Yep.
And it's a similar thing with you, Pam. I call you the heart of WFHR because
thank you.
Are the heart of this station. So many of the things we've talked about, and we didn't even have a chance to really scratch the surface on you.
That's
not
true.
Only the things you do around here, but the impact you've had not just on our station, on our community, but on myself and so many of us around here. I am honored and privileged to call you a friend, as along with a coworker and family, really. You are to me a family. So I appreciate the time, Pam.
Well, Thank you. I just truly love working with everyone. Mm-hmm. James and Seth and Laura and Melissa and Beth and Ashley and Chuck. And
we got a good team.
That's right.
Yeah. We're really spoiled around
that's
here.
That's why we got to get more of them on here.
Right.
You got to interview more of the team around here.
And so. As good as she is, she just teed us up for
she
that.
She did.
Yes, yes, yes.
It was great. Yeah.
We will be having more guests joining us throughout the Civic Series. Thank you so much, Pam, for the time. Appreciate
you're
you.
You're welcome. And there's Tim and Mike and Randy. I think I got everybody. I've got a little list. Yes. I hope I didn't forget anyone.
All right. There we go.
Great list. Thank you,
I'd like to thank the Academy.
You're welcome.
We will take a quick time out and we'll come back. We've got a special piece for you coming up to wrap up Director's Playhouse.
You're listening to locally grown radio WFHR.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103.
Yes.
Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
There are solutions to the rot in the Supreme Court, and it's a congressional binding code of ethics. There are solutions to the corruption. It's a constitutional amendment to declare that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people, and we can do this. These are things that Americans agree on no matter our party. We all know that presidents aren't kings.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio, WFHR. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. President Trump is about to become the first sitting U.S. president to attend the Super Bowl.
I think just the spirit of the country, the country's taken on a whole new life. I thought it would be a good thing for the country to have the president be at the game.
The president sat down for a pregame interview on Fox News. The Philadelphia Eagles and Kansas City Chiefs are preparing for Super Bowl 59. Former Kansas City quarterback Alex Smith says the hype around the big game is huge and both teams are ready for it.
The Chiefs have been here a lot and are very used to the schedule and the chaotic nature that is Super Bowl week. But on the same time, so have the Eagles. You know, they were here 2 years ago. They know this well. They have great leadership.
Smith spoke on ABC's This Week. On Fox News Sunday, House Speaker Mike Johnson said coming up with a budget bill is proving to be difficult at best.
We've got to make sure defense spending is covered and then no tax on tips and these other big priorities that the people elected the president to do.
Current government funding runs out mid-March. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Badgers.
Sees Max, fakes the three, takes the three. Left side, yes, sir.
Fleet.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it. With the right hand, it counts on a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people.
a New Hampshire Senate bill just killed in committee would have moved the state's four presidential electoral votes to a winner-by-district system from a winner-take-all. Nebraska, the only state besides Maine which apportions its electoral votes by district, is trying to end it. The National Conference of State Legislatures defines a winner-take-all system as one where the winning candidate's party, no matter the margin of victory, gets all of the electoral votes. Currently in Nebraska, which has 5 electoral votes, and Maine, which has 4, one electoral vote is awarded for each congressional district a candidate wins, and the candidate who wins the popular vote statewide gets the rest. New Hampshire is currently a winner-take-all state with 2 congressional districts. SB 11 would have adopted the Nebraska and Maine model, likely in anticipation of gerrymandering a guaranteed GOP congressional district. But February 5th, the Senate Election and Municipal Affairs Committee recommended that it be killed in an upcoming full Senate vote. The AP reports that Nebraska's GOP is irritated that candidates Obama, Biden, and Harris won an electoral vote from Greater Omaha's Congressional District 2. Another legislative attempt to end it appears doomed to fail by filibuster, so state Republicans are preparing a ballot measure instead, hoping the voters will change what the legislature could not. We have links to the local reporting and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 0. Mostly sunny with a high near 16 for Monday. Monday night, clearing out and cold with a low of 7 below and wind chills of 15 below. For Tuesday, sunshine and cold, a high near 8, wind chills 10 to 20 below.
Right now, it's 15.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Today, we are welcoming into the studio, well, on the phone line, I should say, Nathan Deming, producer, director of the new film February. Nathan, thanks for being here with us.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on WFHR.
Appreciate the time, man. And I want to journalistically get this out there right away. I am an actor, so every once in a while, being that Nathan is a director, every once in a while, I'm just going to throw a monologue in there and try to get some work. Just every once in a while.
Okay.
I'm kidding. in all seriousness, I don't have any journalistic integrity. I love talking to directors. I love talking about the arts. And the only thing I love more than that is talking to locals. And people that are from this state, from the Midwest, from this area that are doing this kind of work. I think it's really awesome, man. And I think that we need more artists supporting artists. It's something that we believe in very strongly around here. And we're really happy to have you on and to be able to talk about this awesome independent film.
Yeah.
Nathan, before we get going.
I was going to say, this is my first winter back in a while in the Midwest, and I have just been sick the entire time. I forgot that that's what it's like being back here.
Well, let's get into
so
a little of that.
My voice goes, yeah.
Right, well, we'll work around it. But when it comes to that, we'll get into the film in a minute. But one of my favorite things to do is getting to know you, getting to know our guests. So give us a little bit of your origin story, Nathan. Where are you from? How did you get into this world?
Well, I'm from down the road in Tomah, Wisconsin, and grew up making movies, I guess, with my parents' camcorder, and always loved doing that. I think Wisconsin's a really fun place to grow up making movies, because it's just, like, one, you know, it's just kind of a naturally beautiful place, but also, you know, if you want to make a Western, you can make a Western, you know, you easily know somebody with a horse or a barn, you know.
Like, yeah, yeah.
A lot of ways. And go ahead.
Oh, no. I you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and like you were saying, I think I totally agree with how you opened this, and that I think there's also a lot of like amazing regional arts going on too. And Wisconsin is a pretty like collaborative and creative state. There's like a world of difference filming here than in LA.
Yeah, to your point, I spent a couple of years out in California, and one of the things that they were blown away by is when they would look at get done seeing a movie and seeing that it was filmed in Wisconsin or was filmed in the Midwest, and the ability that the backdrops we have around here are amazing. They're second to none.
Yeah, no, for sure.
When it comes to getting into this world, how did you get your foot in the door? What is some of the studying and the schooling that you've done?
Well, I think it's different for everybody, obviously, and I've always been a very DIY guy, you know, like I said, growing up making movies. But I think the real thing that changed things for me was I went to the London Film School, which when I went there, it was headed by a British filmmaker named Mike Lee. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, I love Mike Lee. And I was graduating from college, and I saw Another Year, if you saw that film, and I was blown away by it. Went down the Mike Lee rabbit hole and realized this is the director closest to anything I wanted to be or do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up liking Spielberg and Lucas and, you know, a ton of American filmmakers who are all amazing, but then I saw Mike Lee's stuff and I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. You know, I want to do westerns, I want to do all that fun stuff, but like, his approach to life and filmmaking I think is so cool. And so anyways, I applied, got in, and then just had this incredible time of, I think, growing as an artist and meeting people and hopefully eventually finding my voice. And so my dream is to kind of carry that fire back with me to Wisconsin and kind of do something similar to what he's done for the UK, do it for our state.
And I love that idea, and I think that's noteworthy. One of the things that we, especially in radio, noted a while back was, well, nowadays, everybody, if you want to hear a song, you can go online, find it. You want to find information, you can go online, find it. What's something we can do that nobody else can? Well, we can talk about local. We can do a report and talk about local things like nobody else can because we're living here. We're right here. I think it's a similar mm-hmm. thing with not only filmmaking, but with the arts. And really leaning into where you're from and what your vision is, I think that is very noteworthy. And your project here is all the things we've just said. Before we dive into February itself, I want to just take a step back and talk about the project and this year project, this 12-part series that began with January.
Yeah. So this is my current goal is to make a film for every month of the year, all set in Wisconsin. I say current like it's like going to be done soon, but the plan is this is easily going to take me 10 or 15 years. And I want to do it for all the kind of reasons we're talking about, which is to, one, I like concepts. There's a film series by Kieslowski called The Decalogue, some viewers might know, which is a 10-part series based on the Ten Commandments. So each episode kind of stands alone and meditates on a certain theme. So that's kind of one inspiration for this. But also, I just think there's so many Wisconsin stories to tell. And also, our seasons and our months are so pronounced and different anyways. I'm just really excited about how this series can build and grow over time, and hopefully Wisconsin audiences will be into it, which is why I'm taking February around now, and just look forward to sharing the story with you over 10 years that hopefully everybody will look forward to.
You know, you bring up some really great points there, and I think one of them is one of the strongest ones is really highlighting this area and the seasons and some of the things that come from that. And while they're predictable, a little bit predictable at least, because right now it's we're looking at 50s today here. So
right.
All over the place right now. It's kind of, but on a serious point to that, one of the things that I find that you're doing with this, I'm not sure if it's intentional or not, but it's archiving. You know, you're doing something here and you're getting snapshots of these times where 10, 20, 50 years from now, I think will be even more noteworthy in some ways.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that's definitely that's what I love about Mike Lee's films is you put them on and they're all very different, right? Like he's made such different films, but each time you put one on, you kind of feel like, oh, that's definitely London in the 90s or that's mm-hmm. Edinburgh in the 80s or something like that. So yeah, I definitely, that is a huge motivation for me as well.
And I will mention, as Nathan mentioned, the movie the film January was already previously released, and you can find that at Venmo. We'll give you more information on how to find that before we wrap up today. Let's talk about the film February. And again, we're going to have a free showing of this coming up Sunday, 1:30 at Rogers Cinema right here in Wisconsin Rapids at 220 East Grand Avenue. We'll tell you more about those details at the end of the show. But when it comes to the movie February, what went into the making of this?
Well, February is about a Latino immigrant, so we shift perspective. The first one, if people check out January, it's about an older church volunteer at a small church that they might find very familiar, very Wisconsin. And for February, I just wanted to show or start with the idea that our state is very diverse, despite sometimes what the image is in the media. And so focus on a Latino family and how they're fitting in. And the lead, Miguel, who's played by David Ezekiel Duran, he's just arrived. He's struggling to fit in, kind of hates his job and everything. And also coming from Mexico, it's his first winter, you know, so he's adapting to that as well. And the thing that kind of finally starts to open stuff up for him is ice fishing. So... So there's a lot of ice fishing in the movie. There's a lot of winter in the movie. And that's the first thing I would say if you're asking about production is it was fun and difficult. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to film on the ice. Luckily, we got like a layer of snow before we filmed, which in some ways I was disappointed by because it's really beautiful when there's no snow, but also I don't know how we could have filmed anything slipping and sliding, like if the right. whole crew, you know, like 20 people like falling on the ice. And in general, like, I don't know if people understand what goes into filmmaking sometimes, but, you know, behind the camera, even though maybe there's two people on screen ice fishing, there's 20 people, you know what I mean? There's 15 or 20 people helping out, and we had three production vehicles, so that's three cars, and even though I was assured over and over again that the lake ice was 2 feet thick and safe, and there were plenty of giant campers and trucks out on the ice, it still was really nerve-wracking.
It's a little nerve-wracking, yeah. Shot,
yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure.
How long
do you
did
ice
the,
fish?
I have, yeah. I haven't in a little while here, but I have ice fished a number of times, enough to know exactly what you're talking about for sure. Especially when you're in your, you know, you're just in your shack and you step out of there after maybe an hour or two and you look around and there's so many people on the ice that weren't there before and you start thinking about that, the weight of that and everything. How long did this this take to film? How long did was this project?
Kind of a normal film window, a couple weeks. And, you know, especially when you're filming for weather, it's like, it's kind of reliable, but also you need to have days built in where, I don't know how this happened, but towards the end of the shoot, there was like a couple, like, just like now, there was a couple days in the 50s and we started to lose snow and the whole look of the film is snow, you know what I mean? So yeah. Then you kind of have to rush and replan things and, that's the joy and fun of filming filming winter in Wisconsin.
We're speaking with Nathan Deming, producer director of the new film February. We'll be telling you how you can see that film in just a moment. You know, one other thing that stands out about this, and we've touched on this a little bit already, with the telling stories that are told every day, or maybe many might not hear. I think there's also something in here, an added representation as well, because, you know, spending time out in California, there's I think a stereotype that happens when it comes to the Midwest and what the typical Midwesterner looks like and what their life is like. And having your lead actor be a Latino and being Miguel and being this particular character, I think that stands out as well. Those of us that have grown up on this area and the part of the world and everything, we get this. We're a bit more of a melting pot than I think people realize. But it still is noteworthy to be able to have your lead in this being a Latino character.
Yeah, well, Latinos are the fastest growing demographic in our state, I believe. And we're having another show in Eau Claire the day before where we're talking with a university professor who told me that it's also estimated that Latinos make up 70% of the dairy force in Wisconsin now. So, like, they're a huge part of our state's identity and economy. And yeah, I just thought it'd be really fun to kind of focus on them, include them. And then also I think there's maybe two layers, hopefully, for what I'm representing. There's definitely that. And then also, like you just kind of brought up, I think commonly when we're looked at, we're kind of looked at as the world of Fargo, even though that's Minnesota, you know what I mean? We're kind of a punchline, or just that don't you know, or, you know, just kind of like, you know, it's kind of jokey. So the other side of that is the ice fisherman character, Carl, who is very much probably a person people know or like would recognize, who I cast off a Craigslist ad. So he is the real deal. He's pretty much his character. And, but yeah, I also wanted to be kind of faithful and accurate to him and that, because like, yeah, I don't like us being a punchline. I don't like being reduced to kind of stereotypes. So yeah.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up, because I wanted to piggyback off of the representation of having a Latino lead character. Right now in production and being filmed is a TV show or a movie about a New Yorker or a LAite or something like that. We have such representation when it comes to our bigger markets and our bigger cities and all that. We need more and more of these, and on a representation level, of certainly, but just on a creative level also. I think that this is important for film in general, where we're seeing more and more parody and more of the same kind of things. How many prequels can we get? How many sequels can we get? So many of these things. And I'll admit that I watch some of those and everything. So I'm just as guilty of some of this as others. But I think that, like a lot of people, we sit back, whether we're in the industry or just fans of it, and like, well, where are the new stories? Where are the different stories? Give me something new. Give me something a little unique. And something that is, you know, one of the things that I think that you're able to do here that is so cool is be able to find something relatable while also something fresh and new to people.
Yeah, I was really, you know what I was blown away by is how few movies there have been about ice fishing. Like, you have Grumpy Old Men, and I mean, there's movies that might have scenes of it. And when you're preparing a movie, often one of the first conversations you have, like with the cinematographer, is like, okay, what are our references, or what other movies have been made about this topic, just to kind of see how they tackled it creatively or anything like that. And there was just so few things. And I was like, this is such a cool, interesting aesthetic activity, very Wisconsin activity, very Midwest. I was just kind of blown away the lack of, lack of films that had covered it. And also everything else you just said, I totally agree with. And I think that there are so many stories to tell. And I think like a huge, we're obviously very divided right now along many lines, but maybe an underappreciated one is the urban rural divide, which doesn't just work on a state level, but on a country level. And I've been in LA for 10 years. And I think I've just seen it really ramp up in that time as well, where people talk about people from rural communities or smaller communities as if they're like exotic animals that can't be understood or something like that, you know? Yeah. And it's like we have normal lives. Like, this is just, we need to be in more in conversation. And maybe on the cinema level, yeah, that could mean more stories that aren't just about the main character is an ad executive in Manhattan or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and there's another representation part of this and a relatability part of this with that, where you're opening eyes with this one and telling stories and hopefully getting people to realize, wow, it's something that I try to do all the time when it comes to people from Illinois and Wisconsin. As much as they may not like this either side, you guys have more in common than you realize. And showing relatability and an empathy that can happen from that. And with this movie, with things like this, maybe creating a little bit more of this understanding, a little more empathy with West Coast and Midwest and East Coast and Midwest and some of these things, and just reminding people that we're all alike, we all have more in common than not, and that's never, there's no downside to that.
Oh, that's definitely a major theme of the film. Yeah, like I truly believe that too, that underneath kind of all the things simmering in our culture right now, I think day to day, in person, right? Like, despite all this stuff buzzing around our heads on the radio waves or the TV waves or the internet. I think we want to get along. I think we want to help each other. If your car breaks down in Wisconsin, pretty sure most people will stop and help you fix your tire. And and actually that happened when we were filming in February.
We broke down
on Highway 90 and a bunch of people immediately helped us.
We've got a free showing of the movie February coming up right here in town Sunday. This Sunday, February 2nd, 1:30 at Rogers Cinema here in Wisconsin Rapids, 220 East Grand Avenue. What does it mean to you, Nathan, to be able to have some of these free showings and some of these things going on with our local theaters? I can't imagine how good that must feel.
Well, it's so fun, yeah. So like I said, I grew up down the road. I should also note that at that screening and every screening as we kind of go around the state, I'm going to be there. And for the first week of screenings, including our show in Wisconsin Rapids, the lead actor, David's going to be there. He's flying up from L.A. So we're going to, like, present the film and do a Q&A afterwards, and that should be really fun. And I love Wisconsin. I love the big cities. I love the small cities. And I'm really excited, especially for the small town showings. And, like, I've just found all these really cool theaters that kind of maybe grew up going to once or twice, and now it's really fun to return and show a movie here.
And I want to remind everybody as well that while this is a fun one, we're looking forward to it. Nathan's got some other great work out there that I cannot encourage you to check out enough. January, as we mentioned before, but Speaking in Tongues is one I really wanted to make sure we just touched on before we let you go. Was that your first feature?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was my first feature. And I shot it a couple years ago now. And very different than this year series, but probably similar in keeping with the themes I'm interested in. I don't know if you checked it out, but it's about a young man kind of struggling in his newfound faith at a mega church. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of highs and lows, and I think it's an interesting movie.
It was, I did see it, and it was something that, while it was, so many of the things I've been touching on, that movie did as well, and I see a theme with your work of relatability, because it was something that, not my wheelhouse, not my world, but I found such a relatability to that character and other characters in it. It's good work, man. I'm joking around about being an actor and all that, but I would love to work with you, because you've got a vision and an idea that you're sticking to with these works that I think is really exciting and fun, but also necessary. We don't have enough of it, and I appreciate that you're doing that kind of work. I don't think a lot of people realize you could be taking this talent, man, and doing a lot of other things with it. The fact that you're taking it and putting so much into our state in this area, I commend that, man. I think that's very cool that you're with the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. That's so nice. And yes, definitely. Let's send me your headshot. Let's chat.
I appreciate that. And Nathan, if people want to find out more about your work, about this project in particular, how can they do that?
Got a couple websites floating out there. First of all, for February and all of our screening tour, which if your listeners can't make the Wisconsin Rapids one, we have plenty around the state the next month. So you can find all that information at februaryfilm.com/screenings. And then also I have a personal website, nathandeming.com, which has all my work, including Speaking in Tongues and a couple other shorts I made years ago that maybe people would have fun checking out.
Be sure to check that out, everybody. One of our favorite mantras around here is buying local, supporting local. That includes the arts. I think it is, I will mention it every chance I get. Wisconsin finished dead last in the union when it came to funding the arts. So we, the people, need to come around and support artists. Artists supporting artists is one of the more powerful things that we can do, not just for our economy, but for our souls and our mental health. Encourage you to check this film out. It's going to be premiering right here in town Sunday, February 2nd, 1:30 at Rogers Cinema, 220 East Grand Avenue, right here in Wisconsin Rapids. Find out more about that and Nathan's great work at nathandeming.com. Nathandeming.com. Don't be a stranger, man. Next time another one of these projects comes up, we'd love to have you come by.
Thank you so much. You just reminded me, can I plug one more thing that I've been meaning to plug on this?
Yeah, tour? Definitely.
So I'm also working with this organization, this nonprofit called Action Wisconsin, which is a bipartisan group of filmmakers and entrepreneurs and small business owners that is doing exactly what you just described, which is lobbying the state to bring film tax incentives back to Wisconsin, because we are dead last in arts funding, and we're one of 13 states that don't offer film incentives. So anyways, people can look up more at actionwisconsin.com, but I'm sure you know, too, that's a huge reason why things don't get made here, and it's such a bummer. So if we can, if we can get that law change, which it should be going through the House soon, that'd be great.
You saw part of the reason you saw, I brought this up, man. See, we already got chemistry. That's great. That's awesome. Nathan, again, thank you for the time, Nathan, and the work you're putting into the all of this. We'll talk again real soon.
Thank you so much.
Experience love on the air with WFHR and WIRI. Now through February 13th, tune in Monday through Friday for your chance to win an unforgettable Valentine experience. Romantic dinner for two, exclusive tickets to the Bachelors on Broadway show, a blissful couples massage, and a stunning gold bracelet. Make this Valentine's Day truly special by showering your loved one with exquisite gifts from our cherished locally owned businesses. All thanks to WFHR and WIRI. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to celebrate love on the air.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Linda Kenyon. Super Bowl 59 is less than an hour away. As the Philadelphia Eagles and Kansas City Chiefs get ready for kickoff, Chiefs fans like this man are mighty excited.
This city gets so just alive every time the Chiefs get into the Super Bowl, and yeah, this never gets old, that's for sure.
Philadelphia fans are equally excited about the game.
It may not be Christmas or Thanksgiving, but, you know, the Eagles going to the Super Bowl, it's a holiday.
My father-in-law's birthday and the Super Bowl. We're having a party for both.
That's what I'm talking about. What are you picking up?
Italian rum cake.
Of course. What's going on?
Cannoli tray. The best. They have the best cannolis here, so I'm super excited.
So, yeah, Philly does a Super Bowl right. Wear green, eat wings, drink beer, and, of course, eat cannolis. Sharon A. Howard for CBS News Philadelphia. Hey.
President Trump says he'll announce tomorrow that the U.S. will impose 25% tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports, including from Canada and Mexico.
Any steel coming in